Sanji, welcome to Irish Radio Network, USA. I'm delighted to welcome a friend, one who I've met it's close to 40 years ago, James Galway. It's no wonder we're wearing a bit on the edges, but you're very welcome.
Thank you.
This week, the Glaxman Ireland House Gala, Glaxman Ireland House at New York University Gala, celebrated and indeed honored you, together with Neil O'Dowd. And you weren't exactly, and you haven't been short of honors throughout your entire life. But maybe you bring us back, Jimmy, to those early days and your interest in the flute as a particular instrument.
Well, you know, I started off the flute when I was about 9 or 10, something like that. And my Uncle Joe taught me the flute because he learned the flute from my grandfather, as did my father. But when I was 9 years old, I thought I was going on for 17, so I wasn't talking to my dad. So I went and learned the flute with my Uncle Joe, who was more to the liking.
Yeah. You know, you were born and bred in Belfast. The tin whistle down in my part of the country, down in Mayo, was a popular instrument. It was affordable, and if you went anywhere from there, it was probably to the harmonica, to the French fiddle, the harmonica, the mouth organ, as it was known. Was the tin whistle / flute, was that the instrument of, say, Belfast, or were you among?
Adrian, it happened another way around. I learned the flute first, and then when I was about 23 or 4, something like that, I was beginning to feel a bit lost and try to find my way back to being Irish. And I bought a tin whistle, and I started to play it. And at that time, a couple of friends and myself, we rented the Queen Elizabeth Hall, and we did a very swanky program of Bach sonatas and Rameau, Pièce de Clavecin. And this was a roaring success, and we didn't have any encores to play. So we played a couple of movements of the pieces that we played already. And then the audience were still chomping at the bit, and I said, hey, hang on, I'm going to play him something on the tin whistle. So that was my debut as a tin whistle player, was in the Queen Elizabeth Hall.
My God. Do you warm to the term, used to be flute player, then flutist, then flautist?
Yeah, I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, okay.
No, because, flautist is the correct English usage.
Yes.
Flute player is more American.
Really? Okay.
And fluter is probably Irish, as in Phil the Fluter. Have you heard of Phil the Fluter from down at Ballymuck?
Yeah. The origin of the flute, can we claim that in Ireland and Britain? What's the history of it?
Oh, way, way back. Way, way back, even before our time.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think it's a very, very early instrument. But now, I wouldn't like to put a date on it.
Would, you don't have to agree, because many others would, that as a master flutist, your playing style has become the measure by which others are judged. Is that a compliment?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, there are many flute players who have their own style.
Right.
And I think unmistakable style too. For example, Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull stands out. Mm-hmm. Hubert Laws, Jean-Pierre Rampal.
Yes.
And people like this.
Has your art changed through the years? I know that you have lost count, and definitely we have, of the number of albums, going back to the wax, to the stereo, to the CDs, to all along the way. I think I am not among the few who would recognize your playing if we were to turn on the radio or hear it somewhere. Is that something that has changed through the decades?
With me, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I think I could say that I play every note with more engagement than your regular flute players who sometimes just blow across the flute.
I know.
Yeah. And they get a nice tone, but that's all.
Yeah. But
you need to be engaged. You need to engage the flute and get the best out of it that you can.
For those who think that, your style, like riding a bicycle, is something you can never lose, are there days, times, weeks when you say, I'm going to put the flute away now and chill? Or is this something that you must do on a regular basis?
No, you know, the thing is, as you get older, it gets more difficult and you try harder. Setting it aside is not an option.
No. So you don't get a chance to put it away. What's your favorite genre of music?
I would have to say opera.
Mm-hmm.
But I like all sorts of stuff, but opera really appeals to me because singers are really great. And, you know, when you hear the singers that sing in the Met here in New York and Covent Garden and places like this, I mean, they are absolutely outstanding exponents of their art. And these are the sort of people who influence me more than anything else. Of course, I love listening to Beethoven quartets. I like listening to anything Beethoven wrote.
Yes.
He's my number one composer.
You must have been relatively serious in those early days, studying the flute, with the masters in Paris and London before you even got to London Symphony Orchestra, where you served for years.
I was just reminiscing earlier on about this business of growing up in Belfast and being in the band, the flute band.
Yes.
I mean, people think flute bands play marches all the time. Well, some of them do. The sort of band that I started in played only marches, but then I went into a bigger band where we played in parts.
Yeah.
They had alto flutes, bass flutes, tenor flutes in E flat and F, and then B flat flutes and
right.
F flutes. And they had all this range. And we used to play things like the Unfinished Symphony, Jupiter Symphony, Laurelian Suite, and I mean, we didn't play the whole thing. We played a sort of condensed version. Unfinished Symphony takes about 35 minutes. That's why it's unfinished. It would have been too long if you finished it, according to some wags.
Yeah.
Anyhow, this got me ready when I came to London and I heard the BBC Symphony play the Jupiter Symphony. I recognized it immediately. I mean, it was something I knew, all four movements, because we played them in the flute band.
Yeah.
And it definitely didn't sound the same. I thought they needed four side drums, a bass drum, triangle, and cymbals, and that would have been it.
Yeah. You know, if you took the flute bands and the wind instruments from the St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York, you wouldn't have that much left. But sometimes it's considered to be associated with high school and colleges and many musicians in the making, much like, say, Irish dancing, they grow out of it in the sense that they get on with the rest of their lives. Is music and being a musician and interest in the instrument of the flute, as you are, is that for the chosen few?
I think really the few choose it.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean.
Yes.
For example, about 45 years ago, this young man stood in front of me and said to me, he said, "Jimmy, should I be a doctor or a musician?" I said, "Well, if you want to play the flute in an orchestra and argue with people who have really no idea, join an orchestra. If you want to be a doctor and save somebody's life, be a doctor. Now, what do you think is more important?" So now this guy's the head of a malaria department in Bangkok.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
a no-brainer, isn't it?
Well, yes. Except that the inspiration for a lot of kids in music might lean towards, you know, piano, violin, guitar, easy to get into and just as easy to drop. Would you say the same for the flute?
Oh yeah, sure. There's hundreds of kids playing the flute who are going to be lawyers and doctors and crane drivers and whatever they're going to do. You know, not everybody who owns a flute is going to make it or even try to make it because, you know, it's something you do in school as part of the business.
Yeah.
And I really, truly believe that playing a musical instrument gives you an extra edge on all the other kids.
Yeah. Ken, would you say to young kids who say, you know, what I really want to do is I want to choose a career like yours. I want to make a living as a musician and maybe as a flautist. What would you say if some young person were to approach you and say, "Do you think that's a good idea?"
Well, I would ask them, really, what's the rest of your schoolwork like? And do you think with the income you would have playing in an orchestra that you could send your kids to college, supposing you had three kids and you have to send them to school? Do you think you'd earn enough money doing that, or would you earn more money if you were a doctor, dentist, lawyer, mathematician that they were teaching in a university?
And that's pretty much what it comes down to. So how does one head into, I'm sure we've all heard over and over again that in life you choose something that you really like, and then figure out a way, you know, to have that pay for your lifestyle. Do you contribute to that, or are we back to, choosing a career that meets your life's demands, or go for it?
Well, you have to realize that being a musician requires an awful lot of practice, and I'm not kidding, an awful lot of practice. I mean, by the time you're 20, you need to have done about 10,000 hours.
My God.
That's an awful lot if you want to be in the top 10. Now, there's not an awful lot of people who are dedicated enough to do that.
Your awards, your honors, as I say, you have so many of them, but Perhaps you could tell us about one that you and indeed your wife seem to cherish, and that's the Gold Medal in the Arts from the Kennedy Center just this last year.
Yeah, this was a very special thing, and the ceremony for that was wonderful. It was held in Dublin, and it coincided with the visit of the Vice President of the last regime, that is.
Yeah.
And it was just a great evening altogether.
You're, in addition to being, you know, the premier flautist, you have, you know, you're a songwriter, a musician. You have dabbled in a number of areas, you know, in music and in the theory and in the teaching of music. Is what you do best in performing around the world, does that take precedence?
The teaching.
Mm-hmm.
What takes precedence is the concert. The teaching is attached to it.
Yeah.
But of course, the main thing is if somebody employs you to play a concert and you say you'll do a masterclass as well, the masterclass is sort of icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, we have established a Galway Academy online.
Yes, indeed.
And that takes place if you contribute to First Flute.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn the flute from that yourself at home in a room with a computer. And then we also have personal learning, which is either one-to-one or an online streaming.
Is that a course? Is that are there different levels? Say again, going online and choosing that as a method.
Well, you know, there's no course, so to speak. There's just with First Flute, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole bunch of videos that I made on how to play the flute, from getting it out of the box till standing in front of an audience playing a Handel sonata.
Yes. There isn't a course where at some point you have to stop and be measured by the level of your success.
Not with us. Not yet, but we are trying to have an affiliation with a university, whereas the people who learn with us will get credits at the university in that subject.
Your arrangements, and even when you are the lead flautist in an orchestra, you have special arrangements. You just don't walk on stage and fill in.
Oh, no.
You know.
So no, if we're going to play any song, we got it all arranged. You know, we have a harp part arranged, a clarinet part, everything like that. Whoever's going to be playing on it.
Where is your favorite place to live, to study, to absorb, to reminisce?
Well, you know, they're all different. My favorite place to live is in Switzerland at home, because I have a great house and it's very comfortable. But, you know, being in New York is like being right at the heartbeat of art. It's amazing. I mean, when you think of the Met, all the theaters that are around, the little jazz clubs where you hear really outstanding jazz, all of these things you can't have in Switzerland, where I live. But on the other hand, you know, when you go to sleep, you're not going to be woken up by some taxi driver honking a horn outside the window.
Yeah, or the garbage truck.
But yeah.
you're recording, the number of recordings, the studio work you do, many would say that is very, very time-consuming, very engaging, but you couldn't possibly have turned out as many recordings as you have without taking a big chunk of your life.
That's right.
So how do you manage that? Do you take a run at it in terms of do you say, okay, for the next 2 months I won't be answering the phone, I won't be
No, we don't do things like that. We just get up and practice. And if the phone rings, you leave it ringing, they can leave a message if they want.
Where do you go from here? No more than myself, there are many who feel that it would be, you know, a very nice thing to say. Do you have any intention of retiring? Do you think...
Not right away.
Where are you going to pack it in? Is this something... Are you an addict?
I think I am.
Your wife, your manager... the person who keeps you buzzing, so to speak, is also somebody who's an excellent musician and accompanies you on many occasions and duets and one thing. How did you two get together?
Well, we met at a class in New York, a flute class. I was visiting it, and my wife, Jeannie, and a couple of other girls asked me if I would like to go out for the evening with them to have something to eat. So I thought, yeah, why not? So I went off with these kids, and we went to a typical New York bar, you know, upstate, and we all had hamburgers, and I had a bit too much to drink. And paid the bill, which they were all delighted about, because they're all students and all broke. And then I had to get back in my house, which had two Doberman Pinschers.
Mm.
And boy, was I glad to get in the bedroom and shut the door on those two guys.
and
so that's where I first met Jeannie.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see her for a bit, and I was playing Carnegie Hall once. And as I came in, she was coming out. I said, how are you doing? So I asked her if she wanted to have lunch the next day, so she agreed. Mm-hmm. And we've been together ever since.
Thank you.
that's fantastic. Are you inclined to impose when you return and when you get back home? Is there an expectation that you should take it all back home to the beginning? And is on the occasion that you might do that, say in Belfast or whatever, do you feel that there is an expectation? I know the favorite son coming from Belfast, traveling the world, world renowned. When you come back into your own turf, and you come back to Belfast, is there a sense that that you feel, well, God, I have to do something special here, or perhaps
no. I just play the same for Belfast as I do for everywhere else, and that's good enough.
My friend James Galway, the Ireland that we both left has obviously changed tremendously. You've always managed to stay away from the political situation, and yet you have a warmth for all the people in the island of Ireland. For that matter, you've developed a very international sense of humor, of, in addition to, you preface most of what you play by little stories. Is that part of a presenter's want? Is that something that you find more?
I don't know what they want, but that's what they get. I mean, I am who I am.
Well, you are. But it's very much a part of your performance. Again,
Adrian, things have changed a little bit since Fritz Kreisler came on the platform and just played and went home.
Yeah.
I mean, I think now this atmosphere has become more loose. You know, actually, after the Second World War, things began to loosen up a bit. People were a bit more happy that the war had finished, and they wanted more interaction. And I think to speak to the audience about the pieces that you're going to play, or to tell them a little anecdote about the writing of the piece or the performance of the piece, I think they like that.
A song, a tune, an album that...
Yes, Danny Boy.
I know. And, you know, many would say that if that is the, you know, if whatever Danny Boy is, when you introduced the other night, as you have many, on many occasions, the National Anthem of Ireland, it's probably a better one than the one that, you know, that that we have. Listen, I know that your schedule is such that I want to thank you for spending the time with us, and that from once you leave here, it's not like you're going home to Switzerland to sit to chill out. You have an amazing schedule, and we want to wish you lots of luck, and thank you again for joining
us.
Okay. Thanks, Jim Galway from the renowned musician, flautist, and somebody who represents Ireland as nobody else can. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.